Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most of the early spring blossoms have faded, but now it's time for peonies, bearded irises, and other flowers to step into the spotlight. We'll talk about how to care for peonies and irises, and we'll get some ideas for other spring blooming perennials that can bring some beauty and color to your landscape. Erin Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is here. Hello, Erin.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at ISU, is also here. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you both for being here. And let's start with peonies. And Cindy, so peonies are something that you see all over the state of Iowa. We have been planting them for probably well over a century in the state. What are some of the different kinds of peonies that we see?
Yes, peonies have they traveled west in the covered wagons. So when they came to the state, so they have been around a long time. The most popular peony type is probably the herbaceous peony. That's Peony lactiflora. It's the one that dies back to the ground in the winter and then comes up in spring and has these beautiful, very heavy blossoms and usually pink, red, white, kind of lavender. Usually around Memorial Day because it's often planted in cemeteries to remember those who have passed. The other types of peonies that are out there, the one that's blooming now is a fernleaf peony. This is a much smaller, more delicate, super fine foliage that has a dark red flower. I don't know of any cultivars. Erin, do you know any
cultivars? No, I don't know of very many cultivars. It's hard enough to get the fernleaf peony itself going.
Yeah, this is a super special one because it is a little slower growing, but it's the peony that you pass down from generation to generation. Because it's pretty tough, it's just a little slow, and it's usually the first one to bloom. And then there are tree peonies. Those are the really big ones. These are the woody plants that have the woody stems. They often have the largest flowers. They can be 9 inches in diameter, and they come up with a more unusual colors. So we get the pinks and the reds and the whites, but you also get the peachy colors, the more orange coral colors. You also get a lot of the yellows and then the true kind of purple colors as well that you don't see in the herbaceous peonies. And a few years ago, 20 years ago, that's where we would have stopped for the different types of peonies. But there's a hybrid now between the herbaceous peony and the tree peony. They're sometimes called ito hybrids, and they're kind of the best of both of them. So it's got that herbaceous habit. Sometimes it dies back to the ground, but you get those tree peony colors. So there's one in my yard called Bartzilla, which is a beautiful yellow peony that's like a 7-inch, 8-inch diameter flower that usually blooms after the herbaceous peonies.
I think a lot of us who own a home inherited peonies, probably. Mm-hmm. They were there when we bought the home. If you drive around in the countryside, you see peonies at basically every farmhouse in rural Iowa as well. So probably a lot of us have never thought about the kind of peony that we have. But now there are so many options and just so many different varieties available. It's a really fun time to grow peonies.
It is fun. And it's fun to have all of the different kinds in your landscape because then you have peonies in bloom for more than that week or two of the typical herbaceous peony. So you have some that are blooming now, and then you have some that are blooming in late May, and then you kind of go into the tree peonies that are blooming in early June. So you can eat a month of peonies, so it's a little bit better than other things. And yeah, they're really good, reliable bloomers in the Midwest.
Right. So those are the pros. I mean, they're incredibly beautiful. I love the aroma of peonies. It's one of my favorite smells in the world. But they don't bloom for very long. And as soon as you get a heavy rain, that everything's over. And also, they're always covered in ants, Cindy. Why are they always covered in ants?
Well, the peonies produce this little nectar, this little sweet nectar that attract ants. And the ants are out there farming it. They're taking it back to their nest. They're taking it back something that just they eat. This doesn't mean your peonies have to have ants to actually fully open. You can wash that off. You can cut them as it's producing them, and they will still open beautifully without the ants. It's just a nice little treat for the ants. So, and the ants are just kind of cleaning it up for you. So it's no harm to the plant, no harm to the ant. And it's not attracting ants to your house. It's not required for that peony to open up. That's a common myth I hear a lot.
When you rush out and cut all your peonies before the thunderstorm, you want to shake them off really, really well before you bring them inside.
Right. You can wash them off, shake them off, put them in a nice vase, keep them cool, and they will open slowly over time. And then they won't be so floppy in the landscape.
So give me a little bit of care advice. I mean, they live for a long time and they are reliable bloomers. But is there anything in particular that we should be doing to really help them be as successful as possible?
Yeah, with that herbaceous peony, and well, all peonies, you want to make sure that they're getting plenty of sun. So at least 6 hours of direct sunlight a day. They don't bloom well if they're getting too little light. With the herbaceous peonies, you also want to make sure that that root or the bud where the kind of stems come up are no more than 2 inches below the surface of the soil. I don't have any clue as to how this plant knows when it's too deep, but it does. And when it's too deep, when it's more than a couple of inches, you get beautiful foliage and no flower. So those are kind of two tricks to make sure your peonies are doing well. They don't need to be divided regularly. They don't need really any special care or any additional fertilizer. Our soils are usually pretty good, so you can just let them grow and watch them grow and watch them bloom every year.
Some people do encounter powdery mildew with peonies, though. Is there anything we can do to try to prevent that or treat it once it shows up?
Yeah, powdery mildew we've seen a lot more in the last few years than before. Powdery mildew tends to be worse when it's not getting enough light, when it's in some shade, and when the plant is crowded or near other plants that are not allowing enough air circulation. So the more sun, the more air circulation you can give it, the less incidence that you would have of powdery mildew. And if you do get it, there's really not a whole lot you can do about it. It's going to make it look like it's been dusted with baby powder, but it usually doesn't kill the plant. So just clean up those that foliage in the fall so that it's not an issue or less of an issue next year.
I have been seeing pictures on my social media feed of people's beautiful peonies. I'm still waiting, but we are almost there in my yard as well. Let's talk about bearded irises now, Aaron. They are another star of this time of the year.
Yeah, they are. And they're a lot like peony. We often inherit them at a house. But unlike peony, there is a huge variety, especially of flower color, but also in size and height with bearded iris. So you can get just about every color in the rainbow with these plants. I've even seen brown flowers, like a rusty kind of reddish brown color. And that's part of where the genus name comes from, iris, which is kind of a reference to the iris in your eye, like that helps you see color. There's lots of different colors that this plant comes in. And so it makes it very collectible, which can be a lot of fun too. And there are a couple spots across the state that have some really impressive collections of bearded iris. One of them that I know for sure is the Dubuque Botanical Gardens. They have a huge collection of a wide variety of these different colors of bearded iris, which is really fun.
And we are specifically talking about bearded iris. There are other kinds of iris as well.
Oh, yeah. This is actually a fairly diverse genus, and they grow in, it's interesting because different types will grow in different conditions too. So bearded iris really prefers to be a little bit on the drier side. It definitely needs well-drained soil. But some of the other types like Siberian iris wouldn't mind being a little on the wet side. It's a great plant for a rain garden or for an area like near a downspout or a low spot in your garden. And that's a spot bearded iris would really dislike. So there are quite a few others, yellow flag and little crested iris that come up, little reticulated iris that come from little bulbs. It's a pretty diverse group of plants.
All right, so full sun, well-drained soils. What else do we need to know about bearded iris to make them as spectacular as possible?
Yeah, so a lot like peony, they have a very limited bloom. They kind of come up about the same time, maybe a scotch earlier than peony. And open up. The flowers are really showy for about a week, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, depending on the weather. The flowers can also be hit kind of hard by heavy rain because the flowers are big. And so you kind of have to watch for that. When the flowers fade, it's definitely beneficial to deadhead iris. Remove that spent stalk. You just remove the stalk down to as low as you can down into the foliage. And this helps kind of keep the plant from focusing on producing a pod and seeds, and instead help kind of keep the root system nice and strong so you can have nice flowers the following season.
All right. And what about division? I know that's something that a lot of people do with their irises.
Yes. Iris do divide pretty readily. And iris, unlike peony, can sometimes really benefit from regular division because the flowers, when plants get kind of crowded, they will be less, there'll be fewer blooms. So dividing kind of on a regular schedule, maybe every five or so, maybe a little bit longer, depending on how vigorous the plants are, how big they are, is a good idea. We do this at a very interesting time in Iowa. Unlike a lot of other perennials, we actually do the division late summer, kind of like end of July. Which isn't typical for a lot of our perennials. And the most important thing to keep in mind when you're dividing these plants, well, there's two things. One is you want to inspect those big, thick, coarse rhizomes. We have a couple of issues. There's a borer that can be a big issue. There's also some bacterial rots or diseases that can be an issue, and they cause hollow or mushy or kind of dead rhizomes. And when we divide, we want to pull those plants out, those rhizomes out, so that we're not perpetuating that in the new plants that we're putting in the ground. And the other thing we have to keep in mind is that when we move these plants, they have to be very shallow in the soil, right at the soil level, not covered in a ton of mulch. In fact, a lot of times we'll cut the leaves back halfway because when you plant them correctly, there's so much foliage, they flop over really easily. So if you cut the leaves in half, they're more likely to stand up. But get that rhizome right at the surface of the soil.
All right. Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, please subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we spent so much time talking about peonies and irises, we didn't get a chance to talk about some of your other favorite spring blooming perennials. So you want to throw a few out there? Aaron, you want to go first?
Yeah, I love false indigo or baptisia. Mm-hmm. I love amsonia, which is blooming right now in my garden, or blue stars. And I like pinks or dianthus, which is a nice kind of ground cover, bright pink, usually pink or white. Not named for the color, though. Named for the frilly edge of the petals.
Now, why did Cindy laugh about dianthus?
It's not my favorite. Pinks are not my favorite. I do have half a dozen in the rock garden, but dianthus are pink. They're beautiful when in bloom, but they're a little picky as to sight. They need good, well-drained soil, so they
this
do really
true.
Well in my rock garden. And growing up in the South, pinks were always something we wanted to grow. But it's, you know, a lot hotter in the summer, and the pinks would always die out.
Yeah, they would kind of melt away.
Totally melt away. So It's one of those that I have baggage with, I guess. So.
Well, you do see a lot of dianthus in the garden centers this time of year because they do bloom in spring and they're very showy, so they sell well. And there are certainly better cultivars than others.
So some are definitely in my rock garden where it's incredibly well drained. They get a little bit of shade in the midday. They do okay. I try and put them anywhere else in the garden and they're just a miserable fail for me. So
I think this is kind of historic, Cindy, because I don't think you've ever said anything bad about a flower ever before in my presence. So
yeah. Like I said, I come with baggage when it comes with dianthus.
All right. So you want to tell us about a couple of your favorites, Cindy?
Sure. Well, one of them that was just last week, I saw a field of Virginia bluebells and there's nothing quite like it. So that's a nice spring bloomer. Some other things that I think, like the pinks, the dianthus, I have some creeping phlox that is blooming in my landscape. And that's a brilliant pink color, low growing, and also does really well. And then I can't get over, I love bleeding hearts, because bleeding hearts was something we couldn't grow well in the South. And it's just such a unique flower.
I have a cultivar called Gold Heart that has this chartreuse foliage. It is fantastic looking this time of year.
It is just amazing. But here's the kind of kicker with this one is this is an ephemeral. So this is another plant that doesn't like the heat and often goes dormant when it gets hot. And I still love it. But if dianthus were to do that for me, then I hate it. So, I don't know. I can't explain it.
But a lot of these flowers are only really beautiful for a brief period of time. This is just, it's one of the joys of spring, but also one of the tragedies of spring as well, that you only get to enjoy these things for a brief moment in time. And of course, peonies and irises are the perfect example of that.
I agree. And that's what ephemeral means. It's short-lived, and we should appreciate whatever's blooming in your landscape this time of the year, because it may not be there in 2 weeks.
All right, let's go to the phones. Your questions, 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to offer up that I have a peony plant. It's in two separate locations. It's pretty tall. It gets like 3 feet high. But that plant itself is over 100 years old. It's probably 110 because it came from my grandmother's garden when she lived over by the south side by Graziano's grocery store by St. Anthony's Church.
Wow. That's so cool.
I know. I know. And my mother in the 1970s brought it to her house on the south side over by the airport, and it didn't do well. Because when I actually got it from my mom's house in 2008, it was just a little 1-inch, 2-inch shriveled stick. And since I've been in this house in 2008, now it's 2022, it's thriving like crazy in both locations.
Oh, that is awesome, Richard. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I know that a lot of people have a lot of history with their peonies. I also have a personal philosophy that if you have a favorite flower, you should make sure that all of the people who love you know that it's your favorite flower, because then every time they see or smell that flower, they will think of you. And my grandma Nebbie's favorite flower was the peony. So it's just good life advice.
It is. And it's one of those that lasts for generations. There's a cultivar called Festiva Maxima that has been documented to be for sale for over 150 years. So that doesn't happen much in the perennial world. So lots of fun ones out there.
All right. Yep. Let's go back to the phones. Kathy's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for talking to me.
Sure.
I'm pretty new at this gardening thing, but we have a gorgeous fern leaf peony that was here when we moved in many years ago. It's in what was a raised bed, but the soil has, over time eroded down. So the bed is pretty empty of soil, except, it starts at the bottom of the box. And I'm just, if I want to use the bed now and fill it with soil, can I cover up the peony that's there? How does that work?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't add too much extra soil in that area. because once again, peonies don't like to be too deep. And this one is a very slow grower. And if it's too deep, it might start to rot. And you would not want to lose this one because this is a very valuable plant as well.
Right.
If it's in a bad location, though, it is, you are able to move it. You can transplant even fern leaf peonies sometime in late summer. Let it get through most of the summer. So sometime in August, you can transplant it to another location that might be more protected. It'll take a couple of years to reestablish, but it's a lot tougher than we give it credit in transplanting and moving it. And I would do that instead of just adding a bunch of soil to that particular bed. So.
Okay. Yeah, I've always heard that they don't like to be moved, but
they don't. It's not their first choice. They're one of those things that can tolerate being where they are for decades. But they would probably prefer being moved than adding a bunch of soil to that particular area so you can plant other things in that bed.
Okay. I think I can actually probably partition off that section so that I can add soil to the rest of the bed without disturbing these guys. Okay, that answers my question. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call, Kathy. Next up, Bob in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I have a plant that has moved very similar to the double fern leaf peony. In fact, it's been called a single fern leaf. It's a plant known as Mary Mayshine.
Oh.
And it's about 2.5 foot tall, and it has about 25 blooms on it, and most are in full bloom at this time.
Wow. So have you ever seen a single?
I don't know if I have seen a single one. I do love single peony flowers in general, though. A lot of us think about peonies as having these big kind of pom-poms of a bloom, but there are a lot of cultivars that have a ring of petals and then this fluffy center of yellow stamens, and I love those peonies.
I know. I like them too, and I've seen the singles in that really dark red in the herbaceous and in the Ito hybrids as well. I don't know that I've seen a single in the fern leaf.
Sounds pretty, though.
Sounds very pretty. Sounds like you need to send us a picture, Bob. So
it's a fantastic plant. It's only been out about, though, maybe 6 years, and it just gets bigger and bigger each year.
And it's wonderful to know that there might be something else in fern leaf peonies, because forever we've had this one kind of double dark red, which is gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely gorgeous. But you called it, what did you call it again? Mary Mayshine?
Mary Mayshine. It came from Maryville, Missouri. They're the ones who developed it. Big peony distributor there, and they're the ones who developed the plant.
Awesome. I think I'm going to be shopping here soon.
Right, but this is a fantastic plant, and the blooms are very similar to the double fern leaf. They're just as colorful and just as big, and it's doing fantastic.
That is great, Bob.
I love it when I learn something on the show. This is fantastic. Thank you, Bob.
And you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Susan. She says, can I dig up my flower bulbs now and relocate them in the yard for next fall? I know they dig up bulbs at Ryman Gardens, and I'm wondering what the rules are around this.
You can do that now if you'd like. A lot of the bulbs they're digging up at Ryman Gardens are annuals, so they're pulling them out. And they're not replanting them. They're composting them because they're treating those plants as annuals. But you can move bulbs now. Sometimes it's easier to move them now that the flowering is done because you can find them.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is to wait until early fall and find the clump and move them then. But the challenge with that is finding that clump of bulbs. And you can mark it, but even when I mark it by September, I can't find it again.
Right.
So you can do that now. Put them at the same depth they are where they're at in your garden. Make sure that you water when it's dry. They will naturally kind of die back just like they always do. And you might have a little fewer flowers next year, but it should recover fairly quickly.
Well, and as you mentioned, with a place like Ryman Gardens and many of these public displays of tulips in particular that we see, they dig them up, but they're not replanting those bulbs. That was a one-time deal, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of hybrid tulips that don't make great perennials. And so they're treated as annuals. We plant them in the fall, they bloom in the spring, and then we pull them out. And we do this with petunias. We do this with marigolds. We do this with a lot of plants. It's for some reason folks are really, really, I don't know, just aghast at the fact that we would treat a bulb as an annual, and we treat lots of plants as annuals that would live year after year if it were warm enough. And petunia is a good example of that. Impatience is a good example of that.
We do get emotionally attached to bulbs, don't we?
I know, we do. And there are a lot of bulbs that are great perennials, daffodil, and some, there are a lot of the minor, kind of smaller statured bulbs are great perennials. And there are some tulips that are good perennials too. Mm-hmm. But those big, showy hybrid ones tend to not do very well year after year. The benefit, though, is that we can plant different ones every year. We can have red ones one year and yellow ones the next, and that makes it fun, too.
And you're supporting flower farmers.
Yeah.
All right. Here is a question from Earl. I live in the Ames area, and I'm looking for a low-growing ground cover that can survive in a wet area that also spends most of the summer shaded under tree canopies. I have tried, I'm not sure how to say this, mazes and Platt's Black, and they don't come back the following spring. I've been assuming that it's due to cold weather or to poor drainage. What do you think? Any suggestions?
Well, there are some other kind of ground covers that you could consider. So like barren strawberry. I hate to mention it. Creeping Jenny would probably love this, but you're going to
have... Lamium would probably do okay in this situation, too.
Yeah, would do okay in the situation. So there's... even a Juga or Bugleweed would probably be fine. I think I would stay away from Lily of the Valley and some of the other ones, but I think there's a lot of ground covers that like the shade and plenty of moisture is perfectly fine for them. I'm trying to think. Yes, I've got Ajuga and I've got Creeping Jenny and a lot of others that are kind of taking over in a kind of a low or wet spot in my shady landscape. Then they'll be calling in a couple of years on how to get rid of them.
Right. Well, I was just going to ask you that because this is, we want them to grow well. We want full coverage. And yet a lot of these plants do kind of take over. So this is one of those things where you may need a little research, right?
Right. You may need to set some boundaries. So you have some edging to kind of say, this is as far as I want you to go. Or you have some other plants in an area, maybe some, carex or some sedges, some grasses to kind of set a boundary so that you kind of help prevent, or you have a location that I'm going to try and keep it and maintain it in this one particular area. Ground covers by nature are aggressive, so they cover a lot of ground. Most of them aren't invasive like garlic mustard, but for a small home landscape, sometimes that's, it still becomes an issue. So it depends on how much you're out there and how willing you are to maintain it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Russ is on the line in Indianola. Hello, Russ.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question, and thanks to all of you. Love this show. My question may be somewhat repetitive. I heard a little bit of the response to Susan's question. Mine is similar. I have well-established irises and peonies, and I would like to transplant some of them. Not quite sure how to go about that.
Yeah, so these are two perennials that do really well being transplanted late summer, early fall, a little closer to late summer. So you could do the iris in July, mid to late July. I would probably wait until mid-August to do the peonies. And what you're going to do for the iris is you're going to pull them up. You're going to sift out any rhizomes, that big, thick, fleshy thing right at the soil surface. You're going to sift out any that are rotted or not firm. And then you're going to plant them in their new location right at the soil level. This is the hardest part about iris, because when you plant them right at the soil level, they often don't stand upright very well. And I know some gardeners a lot of gardeners will trim back the leaves so that it's less likely to tip over. You can also put a landscape staple in, but you got to make sure you pull it back out. You can also put up like a little wooden stake next to it and then pull it out once it gets rooted in. The peonies, most of the time we cut those back when we pull them out to divide them, dig and divide them. You can pull them up. You don't have to divide the plant, but it's a great time to do it if you want to. Give some to friends or something like that if you don't have another place in your garden for them. And then make sure that each piece, if you do divide, has at least three to four eyes, like little buds or growing points on the, they have also have really coarse roots. And then you're going to put those in the ground so they're about 2 inches below the soil surface and water them in well. They won't really sprout any new growth, but they will in the spring.
And most of these, once you've transplanted them or divided them, they're not going to bloom well next year. So don't expect them to be in big and beautiful blooms next spring. But the following year, so that they've had more than a year to get established, usually they're back to blooming well for you.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. I hope that works out well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. 866-780-9100, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions. And I'll mention again that in addition to Horticulture Day on Fridays, we also have a Garden Variety podcast. You can subscribe to that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Or we also have a brand new newsletter, and you can sign up for that by going to iowapublicradio.org/garden. This is Talk of Iowa.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Stile and Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at ISU. And during the break, Cindy, you did some research about that Mary Mayshine peony. Do you want to fill us in?
We did. Aaron and I did, because we haven't heard of any other cultivars of fernleaf peony. And it's been 100 years since this has been out. So we did look up Mary Mayshine, and it is a herbaceous peony that has super fine foliage, or finer foliage than the typical herbaceous peony, which is good for most gardeners, because Mary Mayshine is going, as a herbaceous peony, typical herbaceous peony, it's going to be a lot less expensive than a fernleaf peony.
Nice.
And he was absolutely correct. Bob was correct that has a beautiful dark red flower with a yellow center.
So. Yeah, good Iowa State colors. Actually.
It is good Iowa State colors. I still want to buy one. But it's just not a fernleaf peony. It's a different species.
But it looks different than some of the other ones you may already have in your garden, and stunning beauty.
Right. Yes.
All right, let's get to the phones. Karen is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm hoping it didn't get answered before. I bought some tulips, of course, when they were in pots from the store, and had them decoratively in my yard because that's the way it was this year. And I was hoping I'd be able to plant them, but are they just annuals? And if I can plant them, do I plant them now, or do I take them out of the pot or leave them in the pot, or take them out and leave them until fall, or what do I do with them?
Yeah. Most of those tulips that you buy in the stores that are forced in containers don't transplant well into the garden and don't become good perennials over time in the garden. And so we treat them a lot like we treat the poinsettia or the Easter lily or the azalea that we get from the florist shop, and enjoy them while they're in bloom, and then compost when they're finished. There are a few of those forced bulbs that sometimes do okay. They're never tulips, though. Sometimes daffodils will do okay if they're forced. Sometimes some of the minor bulbs, like the little snowdrops or little grape hyacinth, will transplant into your garden. But tulips and hyacinth, which is the other big one that you often see forced in a container in the florist shop or the florist section of the grocery store, don't transplant and don't transplant well into the garden and don't become good perennials.
So we just enjoy their beauty.
Yep.
And let them go. All right. Karen, thanks for the call. Randy's up next in Brooklyn. Hi, Randy.
Hi. they have got a white snowball bush in the yard. And I know when I take a couple of those long stems off, they're really light and make a good walking stick. But is there a pink or a blue snowball bush?
I don't think so. I think there's pink and blue hydrangeas that are like that kind of snowball type flower. But I think most of the snowball bush, I'm thinking viburnum.
Yeah, it's usually it's a type of viburnum. Sometimes it is the arborist, the smooth, like the Annabelle hydrangeas, but they wouldn't make good walking sticks. So
no.
It's actually a species of viburnum that has these big white. Sometimes they'll have a pinkish blush to them,
or green. I like it when they kind of lime green.
Yeah,
stage.
And honestly, it looks a lot like hydrangea, especially just walking by the shrub. But it is a completely different kind of plant.
Right. And so the hydrangea is the one that has the kind of pink or the blue snowballs later in the season, more summery. And as Aaron mentioned, those stems are usually a little more brittle or not quite as good for walking sticks. And a little tricky to get the kind of the blue and the pink to bloom well in your landscape.
I would actually rather have that snowball viburnum than a hydrangea. They're a tougher, easier to grow plant.
Agreed.
Let's get to some email questions here. Lisa in Newton says, a tree question. This is exciting. She says, we planted some Black Hill spruce about 3 years ago for a windbreak. They are 9 to 10 feet tall, and we just noticed one tree isn't doing well. It's dropped the needles on the top half. My husband watered it well, and the bottom half is showing new growth. My question is, will the top ever regain its needles, or are we too late to save it? The other trees around it look good.
Yeah, this is a very common thing for people who are trying to establish rows of evergreens or windbreaks or those kinds of things. There'll be lots of healthy trees, and then there'll be like one that just doesn't look as good. And it's usually a whole bunch of factors, usually environmental. Maybe that one was planted too deeply accidentally. Maybe it was too deep in the container when you purchased it. Maybe that spot is a little wetter than the rest of the line. I mean, there's a lot of, maybe it's all of the above together. So, I would wait until about mid-June before I make any final decisions on this tree. You never know. But if the top part of this tree is brown and crunchy, then it is likely dead. And then the tree itself will survive, but it will never be a very nice conifer. And so I would likely replace it if the top half dies out. Because what will happen if you don't replace it is it'll establish some new branches to send upward, but there'll likely be more than one. And most conifers, if they do have more than one leader, are very prone to breakage or splitting later in life. And so we don't want that. Now, you could really try to watch after it and trim out and try to get it to one central leader so you can regain that kind of pyramidal shape with strong central axis, but it's a lot of work and it'll never be as nice of a tree as its neighbors. And yeah, you have some time invested in these trees, but you'd probably be better served replacing it with a tree now than having to pull it out in another 10 years because it's still not doing well.
Here's another kind of a tree question. Barb in Ames asks, from what I understand, the Ann Magnolia is more of a shrub. Can it be trimmed into a multi-stem tree form?
Yes.
Yeah, you probably could remove some of the lower branches and kind of limit up over time into a multi-stem tree. You can do this with any magnolia, actually.
Yep.
Most magnolias are very low branched or branched all the way down to the ground. And sometimes I have seen folks kind of train them up into kind of, they're usually like trees with really crooked stems. but you can absolutely do that.
Yeah, and Anne is one of the little girl series of magnolias, and they are shrubby. So, but shrubby still means it can get 10 feet. So it's a large shrub, but it is something that will do nicely as a shrub in your landscape.
All right. Emily in State Center has an interesting project. She says, I have some peony seeds I would like to germinate. They're from the 2021 growing season, but I'm not sure if they were winterized. How should I start them?
Yeah, they will need some stratification. They do need a winter chilling period. And some peonies will take a little bit longer to germinate, because sometimes they need a little cool, moist stratification, and then they need a kind of warm stratification after that. So what I would suggest is put it in the refrigerator, put those seeds in the refrigerator for a month or two, and then put them outside in kind of a nursery bed or a container that's somewhat protected. And hopefully by the end of the year, by the summer, you have something that is actually starting to germinate. The trick is, if you do that now, then you'll have to find a way to overwinter those through the winter. So maybe you'll have to bring that in a container and pull it into a garage so it's a little more protected before you plant it in the final spot outside next spring.
This sounds like a...
it's a lot of work.
A lot of work.
Okay. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
But maybe and the
that's
flowers
just won't... what Emily's looking for.
You could get something really cool, or you could get the most boring looking flower. The flower is not going to look exactly like the parent. It will be close, but it will not be exactly like the parent. Yep. So may find the next coolest looking peony. You're more likely to have just something that's kind of bland.
This is the mystery bag that you're purchasing, and you don't know what's in it. So, yep.
All right. True. Have fun, Emily. This one's from EJ. I have a vegetable garden that I started this spring, but my green beans are being attacked by flea beetles. I'm trying to garden organically. What can I do to save my plants from these beetles without using non-organic pesticides?
Yeah, flea beetles can be really tough in this situation. Trying to think of some. I would definitely plan to do a second planting a little bit later. Beans are a relatively short crop. Mm-hmm. And so you can get away with planting a second round of beans even as late as kind of mid to late June and still get beans before the end of the growing season. And so I would put that in the back pocket as something like if this crop doesn't do well, you can always plant another one. With flea beetle, I don't know of any organic pesticides offhand that would be really effective for this.
But, you know, flea beetle is very common on eggplant. Mm-hmm. So I might use eggplant as a trap crop.
Mm. So they probably do like it better.
Yeah, they like it better. So you plant it somewhere nearby.
Sacrificial eggplant.
Yes, yes.
There are a lot of gardeners who would happily sacrifice eggplant.
Well, the cool thing about flea beetle on eggplant is it tends to affect the foliage, but doesn't impact the fruit as much. So you still get some eggplant, but you end up with a lot of flea beetle. And then once you harvest the eggplant, you can just destroy the plant altogether, and you've hopefully eliminated most of your flea beetle problem.
All Maybe. Right. I think that's Maybe. A brilliant
It's
solution.
Worth a try.
Oh, skeptical, huh? All right. Here's a question from Thomas. About 2.5 weeks back, I noticed our old-fashioned peonies. They have done well for about 10 years, have cupped leaves, and they appeared to be stunted. Now they have somewhat less cupped leaves and appear to be growing, but are way behind a normal year in growth and bud development. They're planted about 50 yards from a farm field. Could they have been hit by dicamba? Could I still get the leaves analyzed for dicamba damage?
Yeah, it does sound like some sort of herbicide damage, and that could be one possibility. I don't know that you will ever know because we don't really CSI these things.
Yeah, and even if you could CSI these things, the herbicide, you have to collect that sample almost immediately after its exposure, and even more than 2 or 3 days after the exposure. There's no test that's going to give you a conclusive result about whether it was a herbicide or not. And so often it's days, weeks, sometimes months before we notice this damage. Right. And so even if we could do like a CSI kind of test, and they are out there, they're super expensive and they will almost always come back inconclusive. So it's not worth the effort.
But the good news for this story is that the peony's coming back.
Yeah.
So, and less damage. So even if it did get hit, you might have some unusual foliage that still remains, but the peony is going to survive it.
And I would watch a CSI Hort Gang.
Oh, that would be fun. So can we be on it?
I'm not the developer. You guys go out and sell that idea and I will watch. I promise. Okay. Stephanie in Cedar Rapids asks, we had a small tree removed from the margin between the sidewalk and the road, and there is now a large bare spot that we would like to fill with a shrub or flowering plant of some sort. Since it will be near the road, it will get a lot of road salt and sand each winter, and I'd like to plant something that will withstand that sort of exposure. The area should get full sun. Any ideas?
You know, for that little strip, the parking strip, the death strip.
Yeah, the hell strip.
The hell strip. There's some other terms that we sometimes call it. It's a tough place to be, so we want to find a tough plant. Typically, we're not putting low-branched or shrubby things in that space because you get a lot of issues with clearance for both people on the sidewalk and cars in the street and parking in the street, which can be really difficult to deal with. We often kind of go to smaller trees. And the first one that comes to mind is crabapple for this tough location because it's a tough tree. It will kind of be branched up. It'll still be relatively low branch. So if you're trying to kind of block the view of the road and stuff like that, that tree would do a good job of doing that still. But it won't be something that you're constantly having to prune back like something like, I don't know. I mean, a lilac is tough too, but that's just not a great spot for a shrub like that.
Yeah, I'm also thinking hawthorn. That's another one.
Oh, kind a thornless hawthorn.
Yeah, thornless. Well, maybe a thorny hawthorn,
yeah,
too.
I guess it depends on how nice of a neighbor you want to be.
but a hawthorn is another one that's pretty tough, pretty durable, blooms a little bit later, and it's a little different. And it has about the same stature and size of some of the crabapples. So those are two good plants to think about when you're kind of touring around the garden center.
Here is a question from Diane in Riverside, and I'm so excited that she asked this question because I just had this conversation with my son about our lilacs. She said that I've heard several people remark that when their lilacs bloomed this year, the colors were pale or even white, even very old lilac bushes that have been darker colors in years past. She says she's noticed that with her own lilacs. I also noticed it this year. So what's going on?
This is a fascinating thing. I have been hearing about this for about the last week, and it is an environmental response. And, you know, there are some things that cause plants to have different colored flowers. You know, flowers naturally age to a lighter color. And some plants are influenced by pH for flower color. A lilac is not one of those plants. It looks like, and this seems to be very common, especially on the east side of the state. Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Waterloo, kind of like that kind of area. And what I think is going on here is that we had a couple of very warm days at a very kind of critical time in the flower development of these lilacs. And the pigment that causes kind of a reddish color in plants that would give lilacs their pink or purple hue is anthocyanin. And anthocyanin breaks down very readily in heat. Purple asparagus and purple beans, that purple comes from anthocyanin. And then when you blanch them, it goes away because it's destroyed by the heat. So it looks like these plants at just the right time experienced those very hot temperatures we had in early May. It caused the anthocyanins to break down, and the plants opened up white or a creamy yellow color instead of their normal color. The good news is not a big deal for the plant. It doesn't affect the overall health of the plant. And unless we have the most bizarre 2 years in a row where we get this exact kind of perfect storm of environmental conditions at the exact right time, you'll have regular flowers next year.
I think you just wrote the script for the first episode of CSI Hortcase.
I know. It's so interesting. I mean, I've had folks say, you know, they've had this plant for 40 years and this year it's white. What's going on? And it really is just like a response to a very bizarre spring weather season.
Well, that is fascinating. Aaron Style, thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Charity.
Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And of course, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Have a great weekend. Thank you.